From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Today, my guest on the journey is Dr. Alicia Thomas. Dr. Thomas is an assistant professor in internal medicine in the Howard University College of Medicine. She received her medical degree from the University of the West Indies Faculty of Medical Sciences, completed an internal medical residency at Howard University, and then subsequently did a fellowship in critical care medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Welcome, Dr. Thomas.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick.
Recently, we lost one of our regional giants, Wayne Curry, the first African-American county executive for the ever-growing Prince George's County, passed. I had the opportunity to meet with him about 2 to 3 weeks prior to his passing. And we had a lot of conversations about his condition. He was diagnosed with lung cancer, had been through several treatments, and we spoke a lot about the disparities in particular that exist, not just with lung cancer, but in cancer care in general in our country. I don't think a lot of people realize how prevalent lung cancer is. And so with that in mind, why don't we start with you giving us an idea of exactly how prevalent is lung cancer.
Right. So you are correct. And in terms of lung cancer in the United States, the statistics shows, it is the leading cause of cancer mortality in the United States. It surpasses breast, prostate, pancreatic combined in terms of mortality rates.
That's very impressive. So as prevalent as much as we hear about breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men, you're saying that lung cancer still accounts for more cancer deaths than those two diseases?
Correct.
Now, when we look at lung cancer, the American Cancer Society estimates that for lung cancer in the U.S. for 2014, there will be 224,000 new cases of lung cancer. Is that number increasing or decreasing?
So the incidence of lung cancer, it's actually increasing, and not just in the United States, but worldwide. This has many plausible reasons. We do know that the number one etiology or the causative factor for lung cancer is tobacco smoking. At this time, we know that tobacco smoking prevalence is actually on the decrease, partly due to the tobacco control and the message of prevention of lung cancer and to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. However, as to account for the increasing rates of lung cancer and the increasing mortality that it has, I think the most important message is that the time of diagnosis is very important, the timing of diagnosis. Early stage offers the best opportunity of cure, and the later the stage that it's diagnosed is the poorer the outcome.
So with that in mind, with breast cancer, we have screening guidelines with women getting mammography. As you know, in prostate cancer, we have the digital rectal exam combined with PSA testing. And yes, there have been back and forth in the news as to whether or not you should be doing those things and how often we should be doing it. What exactly do we do to screen for lung cancer, given the fact that the incidence is so high? And then as I look at the death rate, 159,000 deaths against 224,000 new cases. Sounds like a pretty significant death rate. What types of screening is recommended currently?
Okay. So recently, in the past 2 years, in fact, in 2011, there was a landmark multicenter trial. It's called the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial, that was embarked upon, and the results were reported. And the trial screened over 50,000 patients who were smokers, and found that there was a 20% reduction in mortality when high-risk persons who were active smokers between the ages of 55 to 74 years old were screened and who had at least a 30-pack year history of tobacco smoking. So the highest risk patients were screened with low-dose CT scanning. That's really the novel technology. Many trials in the past have been conducted in an effort to determine what is the best screening modality for lung cancer. Chest X-rays were done previously. Cytologist sputum samples were done previously, and they all did not show a significant reduction in mortality. So this actually is a landmark trial that has now shown that there is a reduction in mortality if high-risk candidates are screened and offered specific intervention for findings.
Okay. Now, I want to make sure that our listeners are clear about what high risk means. And you mentioned 30-pack year. If you can elaborate in terms of how a listener who currently smokes or has a loved one who smokes can evaluate whether or not that person is high risk.
Okay, so by 30-pack year, I mean that you have smoked approximately one pack of cigarettes per day for the last 30 years of your life.
All right, so one pack per day would give you a 30-year pack history.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead. Anything else would make you high risk?
So also, if you used to smoke in the past and you quit smoking within the past 15 years, you're still considered high risk.
So even though someone may have stopped smoking 10 years ago, but smoked previously for 30 years at a pack a day, those patients are still considered high risk.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, black men are 20% more likely to develop lung cancer than white men. Mm-hmm. And the rate is about 10% lower in black women than in white women. What accounts for this increased risk?
Okay. So, as we established before, the primary or the dominant factor or etiologic factor for developing lung cancer is smoking. Historically, black men tend to smoke more than white men. However, after many confounding factors have been analyzed, this particular fact has not been shown to be the primary reason why black men develop lung cancer at a higher rate than white men. So it is believed that this racial disparity, there is more to account for this racial disparity in lung cancer incidence, with black men having a higher incidence. So some of these things that have been postulated within the minority community are access to healthcare, socioeconomic status, the personal values and perceptions of the minority African American community regarding this disease process, their knowledge of the disease process, sometimes fear and denial of having been given such a diagnosis, and the perceived notion of the general public of not realizing how fatal lung cancer can be, and that it is actually, you know, the leading cause of mortality. So those are some of the possible reasons.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Alicia Thomas. She is a pulmonologist and assistant professor of internal medicine at Howard University Hospital. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Now, one of the things that we are seeing more and more is that patients are developing lung cancer without a smoking history. And there have been publications speaking about what we call secondhand smoke for those who may have lived with a smoker over that period of time. I noticed that you didn't mention that they are necessarily at high risk. And also the smaller population who is developing lung cancer without having smoked. As you mentioned, smoking is the number one cause, but it clearly there are some people developing lung cancer who have never smoked a day in their life.
Correct.
What accounts for those people?
Okay, so there is a subsection of persons who develop lung cancer who are never smokers, and quite a significant percentage of this are women, accounting for this. also people who are exposed to passive smoking, the secondhand smokers. And there are other environmental risk factors that are can be important and are also synergistic with tobacco use. And some of these environmental risk factors include things like radon exposure. Radon is actually ubiquitous in the environment. It's found everywhere. It's a natural decay of breakdown product of uranium. And it's usually found in the soil. And it can, like, if there's breakage in, like, the basement flooring, it can actually leak into the homes. So radon, it used to be tested for routinely by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, but that is not so. It's only for new homes, for newly built homes. The soil is routinely tested for radon. So radon is a natural decay product. It's a radioactive product of uranium. So that's one. And it accounts for maybe about 20%. The other thing is asbestos exposure. And we know that it's synergistic with people who smoke. The synergistic effect for lung cancer is actually exponential when both of them are combined. And other environmental, like other patient factors like HIV infection can predispose you to a slightly higher extent than non-HIV patients.
Okay. Now, getting back to the radon, because I want to make sure that our community is clear about this. How does one test for this if they're concerned about radon exposure?
Okay, so that's a good question. So radon testing is actually accessible. You know, you can call to your local fire department or the Environmental Protection Agency, and it's a kit that you can actually purchase and have in your home to be tested for if the level exceeds the threshold.
Okay. All right, understood. Now, let's talk about treatment.
Correct.
So one is diagnosed, gets a CAT scan, is diagnosed. The death rate, obviously, is very high. But obviously, some people are surviving the disease. What types of treatment algorithms are you employing now for lung cancer?
Okay. So the treatment of lung cancer, Dr. Fredericks, is huge, and it's a team approach. It's a large collaborative effort. The most important point and message I want to get out about lung cancer is that it is a silent disease, because by the time you are having symptoms, it's at a late stage. So the treatment is going to depend on the stage. And the most effective treatment to effect a cure in lung cancer is surgical resection. And surgical resection can only be offered in the early stages, which is stage one or stage two. It's multidisciplinary. It involves not only a pulmonary medicine. It involves radiation oncology, medical oncology, the thoracic surgeons, pathologists, radiologists. So it is a multidisciplinary team approach.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Now, as you mentioned, multidisciplinary team approach, one of the things that seems to have evolved very nicely with this particular disease process in terms of treatment is use of chemotherapy in particular, based on some genetic findings in the cancers. What exactly are those?
This has proved very promising in terms of there's an explosion of research that has now demonstrated that many tumors, especially with the adenocarcinoma, which is actually now the most common histological type of lung cancer, it is showing genetic mutations and they have now demonstrated that these genetic mutations can be treated by targeted chemotherapy agents that have been shown to help to prolong survival and palliate patients of symptoms.
Thank you very much for the breadth of information that you've supplied us with today. As I said, one of the main reasons that inspired us to do this show today was Wayne Curry. And I hope that we can continue to bring awareness to an issue that obviously ultimately took his life. But as he did when he was living, he influenced us to do the right things and to try to make changes in our society around us. So although his journey with us has ended, he certainly is going to continue to influence our journey. My guest today has been Dr. Alicia Thomas. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.
Howard University Radio Network is WHUR World on HD2. Student-run WHBC HD3. GlassHouseRadio.com. HUR Voices Sirius XM 141. HBCU Sirius XM 142. And 96.3 WHUR Washington.